And he began to tell the people this parable. A man planted a vineyard and let it out and went into another country for a long while. When the time came, he sent a servant to the tenants so that they would give him some of the fruit of the vineyard. But the tenants beat him and sent him away empty-handed. And he sent another servant, but they also beat him and treated him shamefully and sent him away empty-handed. And he sent yet a third. This one also they wounded and cast out. Then the owner of the vineyard said, "What shall I do? I will send my beloved son. Perhaps they will respect him." But when the tenants saw him, they said to themselves, "This is the heir. Let us kill him so that the inheritance may be ours." And they threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. What will the owner of the vineyard do then? He will come and destroy those tenants and give the vineyard to others. When they heard this, they said, "Surely not." But he looked directly at them and said, "What then is this that is written? The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. Everyone who falls on that stone will be broken to pieces, and when it falls on anyone, it will crush him."
Thank you, Naomi, very much for that. I'm going to do something now that I will do very, very rarely, I think, at church. I would like you to just put a finger in the page of the Bible in front of you, and I'd like you to close your Bibles just for a second. I can see some of you already, whoa, hang on, Matt, what are we doing? Stick with me. We're going to read through that story again. Because it's a story, I want us to be able to sort of visualise the story a little bit. I want us to be able to get it into our minds, realise what's going on. So I'm going to read it to you, and as I do, some images are going to come up on the screen behind me that will just sort of help us to just be able to picture the story that's going on. So put your fingers in your Bibles, watch the screen, let's go. And he began to tell the people this parable. A man planted a vineyard and let it out to tenants and went into another country for a long while. When the time came, he sent a servant to the tenants so that they would give him some of the fruit of the vineyard. But the tenants beat him and sent him away empty-handed. And he sent another servant, but they also beat and treated him shamefully and sent him away empty-handed. And he sent yet a third. This one they also wounded and cast out. Then the owner of the vineyard said, "What shall I do? I will send my beloved son. Perhaps they will respect him." But when the tenants saw him, they said to themselves, "This is the heir. Let us kill him so that the inheritance may be ours." And they threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. What then will the owner of the vineyard do to them? He will come and destroy those tenants and give the vineyard to others. When they heard this, they said, "Surely not." But he looked directly at them and said, "What then is this that is written? The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. Everyone who falls on that stone will be broken into pieces. And when it falls on anyone, it will crush him." Okay, you can open your Bibles back up now. It's just good to get a little picture in our minds. We'll be coming back to those pictures a little later on, I hope. And hopefully things will all become a little bit clearer. But before we do all that, I just want to start with a little bit of a quiz. On the screen behind me are going to come some different pictures. And I need to tell you, what those pictures represent, what they stand for. For example, if Jeff puts up the first picture, you'll see that it's quite clearly the logo for Christ Church Central, that it stands for Christ Church Central. And when we see that logo, we think of us here, the church. So we're going to put some more pictures up. And as soon as you know what the picture stands for, then stick your hand in the air. And as ever with all age services, there will be chocolate for the person who gets the first right answer. So Jeff, let's put the first one up. Oh, I think that might have been Mark, actually. Blue Peter, quite correct. Blue Peter.
Here you go, mate. Catch.
Can I throw? No. Okay, let's try the second one. This one should be well known. Katie Goodhart. My goodness. McDonald's, quite right, the Golden Arches. Have a Twix. Okay, third one, maybe a little bit trickier for the kids, but we'll see. It depends whether you've got one of these in your household. Oh, I think that was Dan. Peugeot. I'm not being... Perhaps... Come up here, mate. You can be my lookout, okay? Because I'm looking up there, and they're all putting their hands up, so you need to look that way. You can get some chocolate for this anyway. Okay? And you tell me who is the first person to put their hand up. Don't worry if you don't know the name, just point aimlessly, okay? And don't forget, yeah, them over there. But... look that way. Okay. Next one. You see anybody? Who was it? All right, which one? Oh, you don't know. Which one of you two? Both of you shout out at the same time. You can both have chocolate. Kung Fu Panda. Hey. Twix. Pass it back. Marvel Corp. Pass it back or forward. Okay, we're halfway there, everybody. You'll be pleased to know. Are you watching? Next one. Was that Louise? I think Louise has been first on all of them. Sorry, shout that. England rugby, yeah. That was painful for me. That was painful for Andy. Next one, moving quickly, you're watching? Oh. Ooh, Brian, I think. Nike.
Quite correct.
What do you want? Snickers or Milky Way? Your call. Snickers. I just don't want to do nut allergy things. There you go. You heard him say it, not my responsibility. Next one, you watching? Josh. Microsoft Windows.
Another one that's painful for me.
Being a Mac man. Okay, next one. We heard it. Reaper man it is. You ready? Sorry if I hit anybody again. Pass it along. Okay, three more. The next one's fairly easy, because it kind of got the answer on the picture. But let's go for the next one. Kenny. The London Olympics, 2012. Okay, if you're over the age of 10, you're not allowed to answer the next one. Sorry. I'll look out, you look at the screen, okay? Don't hit me if you put your hand up. Okay, next one, Jeff. Mark, you've already had one. Zach, can you shout? Yeah! I won't ask you to catch, do you want to pass it back to him? And finally, if you admit to watching this, then you're worth some chocolate. Last one. Joanna Tynan.
Yeah.
Go on, mate, take some chocolate. Thank you, you can go and sit down. Cheers, mate. Joe, sorry if this hits anybody. Oh, well, that was... Well, I guess, that was, I'm sure, a bit of fun. But I guess you might be asking, like, we're at church, Matt, why on earth have you got pictures going up of different images? Why on earth are you giving out chocolate? Why are we playing the game? It seems a bit random, especially after you've just seen a Lego picture of that story. What's going on? Well, it's because I think that, as we come back to the story that we were just reading earlier, that as Jesus is teaching this story and telling this story to the religious leaders that he's speaking to, actually that Jesus is doing exactly the same in this story as we've just done in that quiz. You see, what he's doing here is he's using different pictures to point to a different meaning. So when the religious leaders heard bits of this story as he was telling it, they would have known that it wasn't just the nice story played out with Lego men, but that actually it meant something else, that it pointed to something much more important. The problem for us, though, as we come to a story like this, is that if we want to know what this story teaches, what it's pointing to, then we have to figure out what Jesus' pictures mean, what he is pointing us to. And in the story, I think there are five different pictures that Jesus uses, or five different characters that Jesus uses. So I've asked five volunteers, so I wonder if you guys could all come to the front and grab your seats. We've got a bit of a hat theme going on today, as well as a chocolate theme, but that's all good. I also haven't measured heads. So we have the five pictures. What I'd like you to do... Just leave that on the floor. What I'd like you to do is, if you all hold up your pictures, and basically, on the back of your pictures should be a word. If we can go from Kate down that way, and you could just shout out, you might need to hold it high so people at the back can see, you could just shout out the word that it says on your picture that each of these pictures represent. So Kate, go for it.
Vineyard.
Vineyard owner.
Tenants.
Servant.
Son.
Okay. So these pictures, you can drop them now, otherwise your arms are going to get sore. These pictures are going to be with us throughout our talk. That's why they've got seats and they're not just standing, I'm being generous. But hopefully, as you look at these pictures, as we're going through this talk, they'll help us to understand what's going on in this parable. They'll help us to understand what Jesus meant by it. So let's look at the story again, so that we can unpack these pictures. So, verse 9. A man planted a vineyard and let it out to tenants. So the first image that we've got is the vineyard. And that's actually an image that, to the people that Jesus was talking to, been a really well-known image. Almost as well-known as the Nike swoosh or the golden arches of McDonald's. Because back in the Old Testament, in a book called Isaiah, there's a bloke, and not surprisingly, he's called Isaiah too, and he was one of God's prophets. He was a spokesman for God. And in chapter 5 of his book, he sings a song all about a vineyard. And at the end of the song, in verse 7, he tells us what it is the vineyard stands for. And he says, "For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah are his pleasant planting." Now, the book of Isaiah was a really well-known book, especially amongst the religious leaders that Jesus was talking to. And the song that Isaiah sung there would have been just as well known to the religious leaders listening to Jesus as the Christchurch Central logo is. And so when Jesus mentioned a vineyard in his story, their minds would have gone straight away to this song. They'd have known that Jesus was talking not about a real vineyard, but about Israel, God's chosen people. So to help us understand, we need our first hat. So we have vineyard equals God's people. Took me ages to make them. Lil made them. So the vineyard equals God's people. So that means that as we look back through this story and we see the word vineyard, we need to think God's people. And when you understand that, then actually you can begin to understand the rest of the story and all the other images that Jesus uses. Because if the vineyard is God's people, then Josh, if you want to hold up your picture, then the man who owned and planted the vineyard, well, he must be God. Because it was God who chose his people from all the other people in the world. It was God who made them his people. So do you want to put on your hat? So man in the story equals God. So as we come back into the story, look back down at your Bibles, verse 9. Just as the man in the story created a vineyard, so God creates his special people Israel. But we're also told that this man didn't just leave his vineyard to die or to get overgrown. Instead, he got some guys to come in and look after his vineyard for him. And these guys were the tenants. That's what they're described as in verse 10. And a tenant basically means that they were only really looking after the vineyard for the owner. They didn't own the vineyard themselves. It wasn't theirs. They were just in temporary charge. And I reckon that the point that the religious at this point, the religious leaders who were listening in perhaps getting a little bit flustered. You see, they are quite intelligent blokes, and they would have known deep down that actually these tenants in the story, these guys who were looking after the vineyard, actually represented them. They were the religious leaders. You see, God had put the religious leaders in charge of his people, Israel. He had left them to care for his people. But as they listen to the story, well, actually, if you remember it, Jesus makes it very clear that the tenants really are the baddies, aren't they? Because look at verse 10 and 11 again. They refuse to share the fruit of the vineyard with the owner, and as he sends servants to them, they just beat them up and send them away. And so Jesus was making it very clear that to the religious leaders that actually he considered them no better than the tenants in the story. That they were the bad guys. That they'd got that little bit to lose. You see, just like the tenants, they refused to acknowledge, just like they refused to acknowledge the owner of the vineyard as the boss. Well, Jesus here is accusing the religious leaders of rejecting God's rule. They, the religious leaders, wanted to be the boss. They wanted to be in charge. And that's a pretty big accusation if you think about it. Because on the face of it, the religious leaders, well, they were massively on God's side. I mean, they looked after the temple. They would go out and do things like the soup run. It's not a soup run, it's a bus that goes out and gives the gospel. But they would also give clothes and they would give food. They would be praying all the time. So to accuse them of rejecting God's rule was a pretty big deal. What's the evidence? Does the evidence stack up? Well, let's go in the story. Look again at verse 10. Just think how bad the tenant's actions are. The owner of the vineyard sends a servant to get some of the fruit of the vineyard, and they just beat him up. They don't want to send anything to the owner of the vineyard, but it's his vineyard. And three times the tenants beat them up and rejected them. They were a pretty nasty bunch. Now I know what you're thinking. If everything else in the story represents something or someone in real life, then the servants that are sent to the vineyard must as well. And you're quite right. You see, the servants represented God's spokesman, God's prophets. So if you want to put on your fourth hat. You see, if you remember back to your Old Testament and the history of God's people, God would often send his spokesman, his prophets, to the people and the leaders of Israel to speak on God's behalf. And Jesus is saying in this story that just like the servants in Ask were beaten up and sent on their way, so too were God's prophets. They were ignored and they were rejected. Sometimes they actually were beaten up. Sometimes they were even killed. And so Jesus is saying to the religious leaders, look guys, all this time God has been sending his messengers to you. And each time you've just ignored them, you've just sent them away. You are the wicked tenants. You're the bad guys of the story. You don't want to listen or obey God. And it gets even worse than that. Look again at the story. Let's get back into it. Verse 13. Then the owner of the vineyard said, what shall I do? I will send my beloved son. Perhaps they will respect him. But when the tenants saw him, they said to themselves, this is the heir. Let us kill him so that the inheritance may be ours. And they threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. You see, the owner of the vineyard, he's got stuck for ideas. He sent the servants and they've all come back empty-handed with bruises all over them. They've been beaten up. And if the tenants won't listen to his servants, then, well, actually, he's decided he's going to have to send somebody with a little bit more authority and responsibility. So he sends somebody massively important to him. He sends his son. But again, rather than listening to the son, the tenants thought they saw their opportunity to get rid of the owner's rule by killing the son. You see, in their minds, they thought that if they killed him, then the owner would happily hand over the vineyard to them. I mean, it's pretty stupid when you think about it. Hey, let's kill the son and the owner will give us the vineyard. It just doesn't work like that, but that's what they were thinking. So they killed the son. And in talking about the man's son in the story, Jesus actually here has really begun to talk about himself. He is the final character of the story. If the man in the story stands for God, then the son must stand for Jesus, God's son. And so Jesus is saying in this story, just like you've rejected God's prophet, you've also rejected his son, me. And it's true. Just look back across the page, just at one page back at chapter 9 and verse 47. Look what it says. It says, the chief priests and the scribes, and that was basically other words for the religious leaders, and the principal men of the people were trying to destroy him. And the him there is Jesus. They'd rejected him. They didn't want anything else to do with him. They wanted to destroy him. Jesus here in this story is predicting his death. He's saying, I'm a bit here on behalf of God, and because I'm God's son with all authority, I'm in charge of God's people. I can teach them what I like. But you leaders, you who are only actually the tenants, who have no real authority, well, actually you're standing there refusing me to be king of Israel. Instead, just like the baddies of the story, you're going to kill me. Because deep down, despite all your religious talk and your show of love for God, in reality, you want to be king, don't you? You want somebody else. You don't want somebody else telling you what to do. You want to be able to tell yourself what to do. You want to live as ruler. You really are the baddies of the story. And so Jesus then goes on to outline the consequences for the religious leaders. Verse 16, he says that because of the way the religious leaders have rejected Jesus and his rule, God was going to remove them from all the privileges of being one of his tenants. No longer would they lead or even be a part of God's special people. He was going to destroy them. And I don't know about you, but when I read a story like that, and I begin to understand it, and I'm thinking, yeah, the baddies have got what's coming to them. And I sit there and I'm really secretly quite pleased. Justice has been done. The baddies are going to get destroyed. Good. Good. They rejected and killed Jesus, so God is going to reject them. They deserve to be kicked out, didn't they? But the problem is that actually, when it comes to stories like this one that Jesus tells, as we've seen through all the stories that we've been looking at, that just as we begin to feel that little sort of self-satisfaction, just as we begin to feel a little bit smug, pleased, actually, the stories suddenly then turn and make us feel a little bit uncomfortable. Because actually, this story about how God responded to the religious leaders' rejection of Jesus needs to come as a bit of a warning to us. Because although most of us are not leaders of God's people like these guys, all of us, if we're honest, don't allow Jesus to be the boss. God expects us to, but we don't allow him to be boss. In fact, we could be accused, if we are honest with ourselves and think about it, we could be accused of being just as responsible for Jesus' rejection and death as the religious leaders were. Because I think that we're more like them than we like to think. So yeah, just like them, we might look, on the face of it, like good religious people. Here on a Sunday, we might even look to be part of God's people. But really, deep down, are we letting Jesus be the boss of everything? Or would we secretly like to kick him out of our lives, wishing, actually, that he was dead, so that we could be the boss? So, I guess when we're at school, is Jesus the boss of everything? Is he the boss of what we talk about with our friends? Or do we prefer to be the boss? Making the rules, telling ourselves that actually, it's alright to say all those things about somebody. It's alright to talk like that. And who's the boss when actually it comes to how we treat our brothers or sisters and our parents? Do we listen to what Jesus has to say about loving each other and obeying our parents? And that's not just an application for the young people here, but that's for all of us, isn't it? How do we treat our families? Do we prefer to ignore Jesus when he tells us how to live our lives when it comes to our families? Do we want to live how we want to? Who's the boss when it comes to playing sports, or what we watch on telly, or what we read, or play, or say? You see, there's all sorts of ways that we can reject Jesus in favour of being the boss ourselves. And what about the adults here? What are the areas of our lives where actually we know that we're rejecting Jesus' rule? Where actually we do wish that Jesus was dead? I don't know, it could be that we're holding on to being the boss when it comes to our career or our relationships or our wallets. Who's the boss when it comes to our parenting? How we're going to bring up our children? Who's the boss when it comes to how we treat other people? Who's the boss of our leisure time? And actually, here's a good question to ask yourself, because it's one that's really challenged me this past week. What will it look like for you to let Jesus be the king over everything? What would actually need to change in your life? It's a tough question. But you see, there's a warning in this passage that we need to take seriously. God may be a patient God. After all, he sent three servants and then his son before he took any action against the rebellious tenants. But verse 16 tells us that ultimately God is a God who won't stand by and let us reject his son's rule and authority forever. One day he will kick the rebels out. And verse 18 tells us that they will be crushed as they face King Jesus. It's a big warning that we've got to heed. It's a nice story, but it comes as a massive challenge. So just as I finish and let these guys go and sit in their normal seats and take their hats off, let's all listen to the warning of this story. Jesus is the king, whether we acknowledge it or not. Like the son in the story, he was sent by God the owner to rule his people. He was sent with authority. So let's make sure that we're not like the bad guys, that we don't refuse to bow the knee and allow Jesus to be the king, because actually secretly we want to be in charge. No, instead, let's make sure that we leave here tonight acknowledging that Jesus is the boss, that he is the king, and allow him his rightful place of king in our lives.